What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
And did Who's feet in ancient times. Despite being born and living my whole life in the UK, I must confess I have never been that patriotic. The weather here is terrible, and the people can be pretty dull too. There is none of the frivolity of some of our European neighbours, or, dare I say it, the friendliness of the US. When I hear my fellow Brits complaining about those people coming here stealing our jobs, or anyone suggesting that to be a true Brit, your skin needs to be white, I feel physically sick. Until recently, the only two things I could really say made me proud to live here were the Church of England and the NHS. And then the doctor came back. I won't pretend to know how many worlds the doctor has visited or how many time periods, though I'm sure someone out there will. But I'm always struck that he chooses to come back time and again to humanity. And not just to humanity, to Britain. Of all the nations in all the galaxies, it seems the Doctor just can't get enough of us Brits. And it's his love for this little island that started me thinking maybe it wasn't so bad after all. I grew up in a very English village in a Church of England vicarage. As a child, there were three men in my life. My daddy, Jesus, and the Doctor. Somewhere along the way, I suspect the three of them have become irreparably intertwined. Because all three are wise, kind, and right. To me, they remain sexless, even if my dad says he fancies all the new companions, and it appears the doctor can't stop kissing women these days. They are trustworthy, and they are always there. At Sunday school, the precocious vicar's daughter, I confounded my teachers with theological questions to which they couldn't quite find the right answers. If Judas needed to betray Jesus in order to make sure the crucifixion happened so that Jesus could save all of humanity from original sin, then wasn't Judas a good guy? And why does Jesus so desperately want to help humanity when it was God who punished them all in the first place? Jesus's love of humanity just didn't make sense. But just as Jesus loved humanity, I watched my dad selflessly helping those people who the rest of us just thought were weird or dangerous. And I figured there's something pretty wonderful about a world where there are good people like that, whatever their reason for doing it. Which is how the doctor made me love Britain again. Because The Empty Child is a love story between the doctor and this fair isle. And Rose in her Union Jack t-shirt, so reminiscent of the Spice Girls that I want to gag, really brings that idea home. This is a time when Britain is at its best, and so are the people within. This is a time when I can understand why the Doctor loves us so. It is London. It is the Blitz. There's an air raid. People should be so afraid for their lives that they would be willing to kill or be killed to protect their own. That is the human condition. But that isn't what we see. That isn't what happened. Here we see Nancy, young and terrified, turning herself into some sort of Mother Teresa in an effort to look after those children who have found themselves homeless and hungry. Breaking into houses during air raids, she makes sure they are all fed and all happy. As the doctor says, as he joins them for dinner, I'm not sure if this is Marxism in action or a West End musical. Either way, I'd like to think it's ever so British. Which is not to say that the Doctor always loves the way that Britain is run. How wonderful to watch him across the decades tell off some of our greatest leaders, or despair at the selfish, petty nature of humans. The doctor as a Christ-like figure, teaching us the right way to behave. Just like Jesus, he can get angry when we don't do it right. As a religious studies teacher, but not a very religious one, I love the comparisons which can be made between the doctor and some of history's great spiritual leaders. When humanity needs him most, call for him, and he'll come. He's forgiving most of the time, and he tries to avoid messing with predestination or fixed points in time. And here's what's so special about humanity. When the doctor does try to change a fixed time period in the waters of Mars, we're told that it is because he has been alone for too long. It's a human that makes sure he doesn't go too far. Humanity makes the doctor a better person. So maybe being human, and being a British one at that, isn't so bad after all. If we're good enough for the doctor, we're good enough for Jesus. Who am I to say we aren't the greatest race on earth? There are some pretty scary things in this world. Not least the empty child himself, who is without a doubt the scariest monster since those young women in the Curse of Fenric, about whom I still have nightmares. And if we don't have someone to believe in, it's a pretty miserable world.
Hi, I'm JR.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking. I don't know why, actually, Rob, we always say you're listening to You and Who Talking, because there's actually a pre-recorded intro that says you're listening to You and Who Talking, isn't there?
Just in case someone was out making a cup of tea while that was on.
Yeah, and just in case anybody's downloaded it by accident and doesn't realise what they've downloaded.
Yeah, or they're randomly shuffling their podcasts on their preferred player of choice.
Well, yes, actually, that's true. People probably do that.
Hmm.
Anyway, we've just heard from Martha Oster.
We have.
Again, her second one, yeah, on The Empty Child. And that's quite an interesting essay about the Doctor as somebody who sets an example by which you can live your life.
Yeah, a deeply personal essay there, I've got to say, JR. And I guess because we've just played it, we can actually talk about this one. Normally we can't sort of preempt our essays. And, you know, talking about the three men in her life being her father, Christ, and the doctor, I thought, gosh, this is really personal. I found it really interesting to listen to.
Yeah. It's because as we grow up with Doctor Who, the things that Doctor Who sort of sets out by which the series is an example to people, oftentimes those are the things we take on board as kids, and hopefully we grow up into adults who wouldn't be bullies or wouldn't, you know, who'd have a sort of quite a liberal outlook on life. Obviously, this doesn't work for all Doctor Who fans, but this is the kind of thing that Doctor Who, I suppose, should teach us. The doctor's the kind of person who will walk into a situation, who will assess the situation, and who will always take the side of the people who are the sort of most forward-thinking or the most kind-hearted, I suppose.
Yeah, I like to think most Doctor Who fans are like that, but you only need to take a quick walk through Twitter to see some aren't, and you wonder, gosh, what show are you watching?
Yeah, this is the thing that always gets me. But I don't suppose we should go too deeply down that rabbit hole, eh?
No, not today.
No, but that was a lovely essay.
Absolutely.
Oh, and we've got two essays this week, as people will probably have worked out by now, because these were two quite short ones. The next one up is very short indeed, really. It's less than 3 minutes, so we thought we'd bung these two out together to sort of make up the time a bit, didn't we?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done this sort of double header format, but I like it. I like doing this for a change.
Yeah, it's nice to shake things up a bit. Yeah. But next up, we've got Dave Workman, and his essay is from the very first You and Who book, which is a book that wasn't really themed, so people could write about anything they wanted to write. Mm. And Dave has written about, becoming a fan during the wilderness years.
That's right, and because this is an essay we haven't played, I don't want to spoil it, but I really enjoyed hearing this one. The Wilderness Years are very personal to me as a fan. You know, there's some fun stuff that happened in those years for me.
Yeah, and I think this is, you know, for a generation who grew up without Doctor Who on the television, this essay is going to sort of ring true for quite a lot of people, isn't it?
It does indeed.
I think we'd better get on and let him tell us his story then.
I think so. The stage is yours, Dave.
Through the Wilderness by Dave Workman, 31, from London. Favourite Doctor, John Pertwee. Favourite story, The Seeds of Doom. With hindsight, becoming a Doctor Who fan in 1994 at the age of 9 wasn't one of the greatest decisions I've ever made. By that point, it had been off the air long enough for both me and my peers to have never encountered it originally. With repeats competing with Sunday roasts, vague memories of John Pertwee and Crinkly Bottom, and Paul McGann 2 years away, you would assume it didn't stand much of a chance. Yet strangely, it was almost a blessing that during the 1990s, Doctor Who was the pariah of British television, hidden from view, only to be talked about in order to be ridiculed. As a boy with no interest in football, a major character flaw in Britain, the programme's focus on a man who always did the right thing, but rarely in a manner that endeared him to the arbiters of cool throughout the universe, struck a major chord, as it did with so many others. I moved through all the stages of fandom, starting off with the awful, awful drawings, which I doubt I'd be able to improve upon nowadays, depicting the various doctors in combat with monsters that clearly weren't canonical, graduating to become the fan where what was canonical became important, before achieving that simple state of grace whereby the fact that the show still exists seems a blessing. Okay, so I didn't really meet anyone like-minded under the age of 30, but what that meant was that the show became mine. Like the best culture in any form, Doctor Who succeeds because it can mean something distinctly different to each individual viewer. Thus, my relationship with the show was deeply personal, highly subjective, and, importantly, free from the opinions of anyone else. Okay, it meant something indefinable to me, but that meant that as I changed, my opinions, understanding, and interests surrounding the show did too, and there was always something to satisfy me. Far from being an unhealthy obsession, the show gave me a much greater appreciation of those great liberal tenets: tolerance, compassion, and bubble wrap painted green. Since the series returned in 2005, and with me maturing slowly into adulthood, I never felt I've had to question my loyalty to the show. I still take a detailed interest in the series, but perhaps because I don't have my era to defend, I've been happy to be taken wherever Russell T. Davis or Stephen Moffat want me to go. I've come to an understanding between myself and the show that means it will always be there in my life. I've also come to realise something else. If I was 10 years old now, I would be so cool.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.